Welcome to Symptomatic Redness.
Today is the second part of our interview with Chris Catrone of the Platypus Affiliated Society.
That's the other problem, is that on the left, people have a confusion about politics, meaning that they think politics means elections. And I guess they also think that it means like subcultural affinity, like group of like policing of the movement, right? So you get movementism and electoralism, and that's what politics is. And it's like, well, actually, we need something other than social movementism at best, and at worst, a kind of subculture affinity group, internal policing, and something obviously different and better than electoralism. And yet that's spontaneously what politics is. It's like, what group are you part of? What movement are you participating in? Or who are you voting for? And it's like, well, actually, something other than those things needs to happen. And that's where I totally agree with, you know, Mike and the CPGB and the sort of so-called neo-Kautskyan turn, which is that party, you know, political party is really what we have to be ultimately trying to build. The problem being that we're not in a position to do so immediately. So the Trotskyists have this idea, you know, it's natural, right, that they have this idea because they come out of the 20s and 30s. So they adopt Trotsky's position of trying to split and regroup the existing parties, the Social Democratic and Communist parties. But those don't exist anymore. And they really didn't exist after World War II. They didn't exist in the same way that they did for Trotsky in the 20s and 30s. So the far left orients towards each other as if it's a matter of like building the party. And there is an intermediary step, and that would be movement building in a sense, but not movementism in the way that Stalinism, you know, the sort of pop front idea of the movement gets in the way of what needs to be done there. So I think that that, you know, also affects things. I think that that changes what the stakes are. And I think that a certain kind of opportunism would be necessary in trying to build cadre towards socialism, meaning a lot of things that people think divide the left would have to be just set aside.
Well, flesh out what that means a little more, opportunism.
Well, in the sense of, you know, if the dialectic, if you will, is sectarianism versus opportunism, in other words, that you're either meeting people where they are at the expense of changing them, or you're so principled as to just, you know, be closed up in your own insular group, right? So the sect versus the opportunist. And by the way, sect doesn't only mean small. It could also mean large.
Right.
So you could have like a large sect. And in some ways, maybe that is what we need, which is a large sect. But then the question is, according to what principle? Meaning one could say that the pre-World War I SPD was something of a sect. It was just a big sect instead of a small sect.
That sounds like a stretch.
Well, it's a big sect in the sense that, you know, if you look at the history, so both Bernstein and Luxembourg expressed dissatisfaction with the complacency of the SPD. In other words, that it seemed to just exist. And Bernstein thought, well, okay, we exist, and so therefore we're bound to participate in politics. In other words, to engage in, you know, reform measures and make alliances with other parties and participate in the political process. Whereas Luxembourg thought, okay, we exist, and therefore we're bound to make the revolution, right? And there was a way in which the SPD found itself in a kind of stuck in a mode of building itself up such that ultimately it could neither act in the direction of becoming a normal capitalist party, nor could it make the revolution, as it turned out. However, it needed to get to that point. In other words, it needed to get to the point of being able to pose the question, okay, why do we exist? What are we for? And we're not at that point. In other words, you can't say that the challenge of the left is that it's a force in the world who now has to question its true purpose, right? That's not what's going on,
yeah.
Right? So instead, the question is, well, how can we come into existence? How can, you know, in other words, how can we take, you know, some ideas, essentially, and some, you know, really disparate, atomized social struggles and, you know, cohere something more consistent and enduring out of that. Otherwise, right, will all end up Democrats, right? Van Jones was a Maoist, right? And so, you know, that's just the way it goes, right? If you want to stay political. Or you can become some kind of an underground Maoist, I guess, who does craven kind of liberal kind of grassroots stuff. You know, those are the examples that we have from the last generation. I guess there are versions of that with Trotskyism, but less so in the United States, more so in Europe, like in France and in the UK. You have Trotskyists who either went underground or just became laborites or joined the Mitterrand Socialist Party. And I think that that's where we need to look at the last time there was a mass socialist movement. It came out of a shift in capitalism at the end of the 19th century, the rise of imperial capitalism, imperialist capitalism, monopoly capitalism, the Second Industrial Revolution. You know, that's where it came from. That's where the Second International, the mass parties of the Second International came from. They came from the post-1873 and then post-1893 crisis. Periods and the rapid industrialization that took place after those panics. So the new capitalism that emerged is how those socialist parties were organized. In other words, it was workers who were kind of newly employed in new industries who were immediately organized by socialists. And that's why these parties mushroomed as they did in those decades. And, you know, we're on the verge of a new period like that. The problem is that there are severe practical habits, bad practical habits, but really ideologies, thinking patterns that get in the way of doing what's necessary now. You know, so people look back at the Second International, they say, well, it's kind of reformist, it's kind of heterodox, you know, it's got all these kind of disparate figures, there's no coherent program or ideology.
Well, that's not quite true.
Not entirely true, right? But it depends on when, right?
What I more meant about sect with regards to the SPD and the organizations in the Second International is that these social democratic parties had an actual structural place in articulating proletarian, you know, particularly employed proletarian interests in society. Like that role doesn't really have that much of a parallel today, except where, you know, unionization rates are high, and even then the character has changed significantly. So, I mean, I think that's like an obvious thing that makes it not just a sect. The character of a sect is more, it's patterned after, you know, a religious sect. It is an ideological theory, if not theory and practice kind of grouping.
Also, that's social scene. Like also, character. Social scene. Like, but religion you, is a social scene, too.
But you don't need an organization for a social scene. And I think the idea of a sect, right, is that there's some self-recognition that you don't always get in an ambiguous sort of scene environment. And there's something more, I don't know, solid and self-symbolizing versus the, whatever, the rhizome, right? And people just weaving in and out of each other's lives that happens around, you know.
I think people are freaked out today that there should be a party. In other words, that like there should be like a socialist party that organizes everyone, that organizes women and minorities and queers, that basically that the socialist party should dominate every milieu of discontent in society, that it should be the inevitable place that anyone who has a problem in capitalism will go to, right? In other words, that there should be a party that has a monopoly on gay groups, women's groups, minority, racial minority groups. Like, that would freak people out, that idea.
Right,
and yet that is what's necessary, actually. That is what's necessary.
I think that's attractive to any Marxist, really. Like, no, really. I mean, maybe not, like, maybe not some of the autonomous Marxists, I suppose. But yeah, I think
people Marxists think of it as Stalinism, because that's the most... That's the closest example that we have. In other words, the most recent history that we have of versions of that throughout the world, and not just in the metropolitan countries, but really everywhere, there were these parties that did that. Unfortunately, there were Stalinist parties. And so it's associated with the kind of repressiveness, right? And, you know, you could say that that was also true in the Second International. Certainly anarchists thought of the Second International socialist parties as repressive forces that monopolized.
Sure, but... ideological considerations aside, there is just a common sense that, you know, it's fine to have nice theory, but there is some need for party expression. And even if
to hear the complete discussion, please subscribe to our Patreon feed.